Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Millennial 8. And I'm now here with a guy that I've known for many years under different guises on different platforms. But I think this, and you were, yeah, we've known each other a long time. But yeah, this is
long
the first
time.
But he is a content creator. It goes by the name Pessimistic Idealism. So would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Well, thanks for having me on, Colin. I really appreciate it. I'm Pessimistic Idealism. I run a YouTube channel, an Odyssey channel, and I also write on a blog where I divulge my own philosophical musings. I've been off and on within the dissident sphere for about 7 years or so, and only recently have I been taken up the task of putting out my own work, mostly philosophical related material, nothing too controversial. I also read audiobooks as well of many past philosophers, such as Giovanni Gentile, as well as some British philosophers as well. So I'm a much more historically oriented content creator.
All right. And yet, let's say that you grew up in America, you are an American, and you, even though you have a deep understand, respect and love and fascination with history, you had never been to the old world before until this year.
Correct.
And I should say that you're in your mid-20s. So this, I felt this was an interesting opportunity to talk to someone from who grew up in the new world and for the first time visited the old world, because it's, I was very interested to hear your observations, your feelings. I remember when you went there, when you went to Italy, as it was, you and I were communicating, I think, every day.
Every day.
About your thoughts and feelings as you walked around. And I was fascinated to know how it, because it is a very different experience. And it was rural as well. It wasn't, I mean, even the Italian cities are quite, are very different from American cities, but you were in a very rural area. So it must have been quite an incredible experience for you to be in a place like that for the very first time.
Definitely. It was very overwhelming at first. I remember getting off the plane and the very first thing that I read on my phone, after I let you know that I finally arrived, was welcome home, I believe. I think that's one of the very first things that you said, and that really stuck with me. Of course, the very first day I was there, it was a very, very much a shock to the system. I never left the mainland North America before. I went to Canada earlier, back in 2008 or so, to Quebec. And that was a very interesting experience. I've also visited Nogales, Mexico, which is right on the border. I was there for like 45 minutes and then I immediately left. traveling to Italy, on the other hand, it was an experience that really put into perspective the vast differences between the American way of looking at the world and the American way of appreciating the world, whether it be in terms of culture, in terms of physical nature, in terms of the relationship between ourselves and the world. There's such a vast difference that can only be appreciated by going there, actually, yourself, and taking in the experience, taking in the landscape. And
exactly. And this is why I was glad that you had, that you were there physically. And I also said to you at the time, don't say anything, don't talk to about it. Just
take it in.
Yeah, exactly. See, the trouble with tourism is it makes everything into a ridiculous experience where, okay, here's the tour guide who's going to tell you what to think and all that. It, there's And even if the information is useful and true, you know, and all that, that the tour guide's giving you or the whatever, I think there's a lot to be... The main thing about going to a new place is just experiencing the atmosphere, just being there and seeing how it feels, because that's a much deeper thing, and it's completely intangible. It's very difficult to describe and certainly to convey to someone who's never experienced it themselves.
Oh, definitely. And I think you're totally right, too, about the tourism problem. So I'll just say this, too. So I visited all over Italy. I went to Florence, Rimini, which is right on the Adriatic Sea. So it's basically the Italian equivalent to the Jersey Shore. Nova Feltria, which is in the rural area outside of Rimini, I think about an hour or so away from that, inland. The very first day we went to Assisi, then San Marino too, which is not Italy, but a country within Italy. I think we could get into that a bit later on too, because it's a very, very different place from Italy itself. San Marco, Montefeltro, Rome, and Venice. So I went all over the place. And I think that was within 2 weeks, that's a lot to do. But at the same time, though, it gives you a really good opportunity to appreciate all the intricacies and nuances within the Italian experience itself, I think. But
I would say is you've seen a lot more of Italy than I have. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been there a lot of times. I don't know how many, maybe 10, 12 times.
Wow.
The first time was in 1987 when I was 4 years old. So obviously, and I do actually have, so that was my first time abroad. And I do actually have some memories, very vague memories of that holiday, mm-hmm. that vacation. And we went to a small village in the north, just on the border with Switzerland, mm-hmm. Called Ostano. And then we went to Milan, where my Italian grandmother was from, and where she was living again. So, but that's really it. That's really all I've ever seen of Italy. I've never been farther south than Milan, and I've heard about. Other like Naples, Lucia, obviously Rome, Sicily, but I've never been there, but the thing is the north of Italy, I mean, and it is a different thing, isn't it? Because you've got the very relatively Germanic north of Italy, and then the very different south of Italy.
Oh,
I've heard it said it's basically two different countries, but I mean the thing is cramming so many different places into 2 weeks. On the one hand, of course,
there's a danger about it in a sense, because you can only have a superficial grasping of everything. It's like a smorgasbord of things rather than being able to actually immerse yourself in everything. So you were kept on bringing that up. And I think that was something I tried to do.
Yeah, I wanted you to just sit down. That's the thing, because I really want
to sit your ass down and
sit and look.
Take it in.
Just sit and watch and be completely calm. I think this is something that. And you'll appreciate this. I think this is something that modern culture just discourages. You've always got to be fucking doing something and amused by something and distracted by something. The idea of just sitting down and watching people in an ancient place and just thinking about it,
right.
Just watching it, you know, is quite alien to our modern mentality. And it definitely is a terrible thing. It really shouldn't be.
I was wondering if the whole tourist experience, so this really regimented, almost artificial pre-planning of vacations and trips and things like that, I wonder if it's the same all across the Western world. I doubt it, but I wonder if it's a particularly American thing about having to, you know, like the old saying about like the Great American Road Trip and things like that. You could see like an American family driving in a car all across America, going to every single like little diner and so on, but just trying to get everything in as they go along. I wonder if that's a similarly shared mentality among other even within the Anglosphere itself. So even in like Britain or anything like that, but that, I guess that might be a bit of a sidetrack, but I think that's definitely something that was present there. When we did see American tourists, they would often be on these big tour buses, and it was mostly boomers. and they just basically just would go around from restaurant to restaurant, place to place, and really just be bussed everywhere, kind of like, well, bussing people like around.
Like it's a TV show in a parade of different sensations, one after the other.
It's almost like a jungle safari of sorts. That's kind of, they don't take a step off the bus, really, apart from just going to the bathroom and eating.
Yeah.
And sleeping, I'm assuming, but I mean, basically just what boomers do. But the problem, I think, with trying to cram as much stuff into that 2-week period is that you don't get that opportunity to just take it in. And that's something I tried to accomplish by focusing on the very unique things. For example, something as simple as appreciating the ornaments on a particular doorway, or looking at the particular way in which the people move about, just the attitude that people carry themselves with, the particular flair or cadence at with which people speak, being able to appreciate the atmosphere, something which is really overlooked, I think, if you're so caught up in trying to cram as much
novelty and new stuff.
Exactly. You really lose that, and it almost becomes just a mere opportunity to say that you've been there, rather than actually taking anything out of it that can be of meaningful use to your own life, or anything that can really enlarge your perspective on the world.
I mean, when people see these flocks of Japanese tourists furiously taking photos of things, nobody thinks they're having a deep experience. They're going to go home with a enriched. They're going to go home with a deep understanding of this place, or an appreciation of it. It's obvious what's going to happen. The experience is no deeper than the photo that's going to be taken off it. it's just drivel. It's just something to do. It's just something to say. I mean, but with all of that said, and I absolutely agree with you that this is something that I was trying to gently steer you away from. And not that I thought that you would be some imbecilic tourist, but it was something that I wanted to impress upon you, that just relax and sit there and take things in. But with that said, how did it feel did you feel overwhelmed? Was there culture shock? Was there fear? Was there insecurity? How did it feel?
There was no sense of fear at all. Now, the first day, of course, not sleeping for 36 hours or so, that kind of made everything seem like a yellow and green and brown haze with all the colors. And also, it's important to keep in mind, this was in the middle of that horrible heat wave that went all across Europe. Mm. So I think that might have had, it was like, who knows if it was climate change or not, but I mean, it was bad.
I remember recommending Pellegrino water to you.
It was, carrying bottles of water like ammunition. It was like you had belts of water carried with you. But there was never a sense of fear, even in areas of high enrichment. It was always, the only emotion that didn't sit well with me was a sense that I didn't belong here. It was a sense of...
That's what I meant by fear. I was wondering if you would feel that way.
It was never fear, but it was always a sense of I'm only going to be here for some time, and if I were to stay any longer, it wouldn't be right. I would not be able to... I would always view myself, if, for example, I had another family member who was there for 6 weeks, and we met up later on, midway through the trip, but they ended up wanting to leave. Like, they were just like, okay, they've had enough, but they didn't really have any deeper sense of wanting to withdraw back into the American scene. My concern, I think, was that I would be blinded by a desire to act like an Italian person, as it were, trying to assimilate, apart from, of course, being polite and saying Italian words and so on, or asking a question in Italian, or just trying to respect the culture. But I always was very concerned not to impose anything upon them. And it was something which really, it was always lingering in the back of my mind. Like, I'm not... So although this is, like, ancestrally speaking, my family would come would be from the other side of the Adriatic in Croatia. So, yeah, I mean, it's right nearby. I still felt like there was a disconnect, which it's interesting because you did say on the very first day, welcome home. And I really, if anything, it would be a very wide extended or family reunion of sorts. It would be, it almost felt for me at first as if a sense of embarrassment that I was not able to live up to the, or even not even so much as live up to, but be able to assimilate or even imitate the way of life that these people, who I envy, believe it or not, I envied their way of life, their attitude towards the world, their appreciation of the intricacies and the presence of actual principles moving things, the fact that there are aesthetic values beyond mere superficial ornaments or commodities and things like that. The fact that there was a barrier, I think, and that really just stems from my my upbringing in America, I think, and that really cannot be removed, which is a shame, but it's something I think that just has to be acknowledged. I'll let you chime in on that.
Well, I think it would take time, you know, and this is why I think it would be ideal if intelligent young Americans could spend a fairly extended period in the old world, like every one of them. It would be ideal if each one of them could come over and stay for somewhere between 3 months and 6 months and just get accustomed to the old world. And I don't mean in a whirlwind tour of Europe. I mean to just go to a few places and soak it up, because I think, as I said earlier, that experience is valuable in and of itself, because Europe is where white people evolved and where they became themselves, where they became what we are today. And it's where we belong. It's our home, our homeland. It's the seat of our becoming. And that's not even to denigrate America. I don't care. I mean, I've got no desire to denigrate America. I just think this is where the old world, Europe, is where we don't need to justify our presence, or we don't need to justify our existence. And we certainly shouldn't be. I mean, we've kind of fallen into that, but that's a secondary issue. I think that young Americans should get accustomed. They should see, okay, this is how white people are when they don't have to justify the smallpox blankets or whatever bullshit, the slave trade, Jim Crow, all of that, that this is white people
in a lived environment.
Yeah, exactly. As they are when they're in a place where they've been for thousands of years.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Something that struck me, which goes off of that too, is that there's a lived feeling about it. There's a relationship between the people and the landscape, the environment, that is really self-moving or self-propelling or self-sustaining. That is not the same thing in America. You don't find that here. Where I was in Italy, you could see how everything was organically related to everything else, whether it be the architecture, the practical utility behind certain things, while at the same time, for example, even like a drinking fountain, there would be an artistic expression within that merely functional design. There was nevertheless something aesthetically pleasing about it, something that was embedded within a structure that would be centuries old, or even 1,000 years old. There was even the cobblestones on the streets too. They were put there with care and have withstood the test of time. It's almost as if it's the landscape itself giving birth to it. In the United States, on the other hand, there's much less organic architecture and organic lived environments. It's almost as if as soon as something becomes outmoded, it becomes annihilated and something takes its place. We see this with old buildings. Rather than being maintained, they're often demolished. Here in when I was in Italy, on the other hand, they were not even built around, but all the other buildings surrounding them would reflect that inner principle that was still alive in that old building. There was no segmentation or any kind of breaches of continuity. Somehow everything was able to pass into everything else with ease. And the same thing true with people. With the people, they all had, coming from an outsider perspective, they had a way about them which captured a, if one may want to call it, a spirit of a people, or the cultural or biological or sociological organism that they are, that was manifested in every single one of those individual people or persons. You see this in language, even in expressions, but it's something that cannot be mimicked. It's something that cannot be, I think, appreciated from the outside in the same way that an Italian person themselves would be able to appreciate it. But when it comes to the lived character of the environment and the structures that you would come across, you could definitely tell that it's theirs. It has their mark of ownership and as well responsibility as well. They would surely be humiliated or offended if someone outside, from even from another European country, would say, "We're going to take care of this now." For example, like in the restoration of a building, or in the preserving of some particular, some particular forest or rural environment. If another country was to come in, or another non-governmental organization, like an international organization, I think that would be something that wouldn't be looked upon as welcomed. It would definitely be, they would have taken offense to it. And if I was to say something like, if I was to criticize like a particular building, they would take offense to it, even if they didn't create it. Here in America, on the other hand, no one would give a crap if I was to say, oh, that's an ugly building, they would probably say, oh, well, and they're either agree or just keep on walking if someone was to criticize it. But the way that everything is related to everything else in Italy, the people, they have this common, almost like a, not a hive mind, but just a common principle about them that binds them together. And we could speculate on what that is, but that's another thing.
Yeah, I think that the issue of ugliness is interesting because there are things that aren't, like you'll see a building and it's not as pretty as the prettiest building you've ever seen.
Right.
And I think in the New World, that would be possibly a cause for someone to say, okay, well, we should improve it. We should change it. We should maybe demolish it. Whereas in the old world, there's more of a sense of, yeah, okay, it's not the prettiest building, but it's been there for centuries. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? I mean, why? There's a limit to, it's like, it's not just an express, it's not just a desire to be the best X, Y, or Z. It's that thing is ours. Mm-hmm. That thing is an expression of us. That thing is an expression of the culture that I am supposed to look after. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about like some sort of competition. And I think mm-hmm. a problem that there are people, and I'm certainly not saying that you're one of them. I don't think you are, but there are people who seem to think that everything is a competition. So X city has the best subway system, but the architecture in Y city is better. Mm-hmm. But the water features in Z city are better than in either X or Y city. This kind of thing, I mean, obviously it's always going to have happened, but from looking at it retrospectively now, those sorts of comparisons just seem silly and, yeah. and trivial.
Exactly. You know,
it really doesn't matter. Okay, so there's a better water feature in some other country. Well, big fucking deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't care.
I think you're totally right about this. And that's something I think that takes place in the United States. I mean, well, if you want to look to like Dubai or something like that, look at those. They're almost like garish, some of the buildings that they've, like they're just elaborate for the sake of it, just to spend money. Like artificial islands in the shape of God knows what. Glass.
It's like they do stuff just because it can be done, just exactly. because they can afford it.
Right. They show off wealth of some sort.
It's very nouveau riche. It's very like I hate to say it, but it feels like people trying to better the Europeans at their own game by mm-hmm. having bigger buildings, prettier buildings, but they're not actually pretty. They're garish and tasteless.
That reminds me too of when it comes to the music scene. When you see a classical piece of music that's being performed by someone of a different, I think we know what me. If, like for example, like Lang Lang. Have you heard of the pianist Lang Lang? Or
yes,
yeah. How he plays, I would say he almost butchers. Someone like Chopin or someone like Liszt or Debussy. It's almost just banging on a keyboard for the sake of dramatic effect or playing incredibly fast.
See, this is an interesting thing because it's like everything becomes a pastiche. It's like cargo cult stuff where they copy the surface level of something and then they think that they've got the whole thing because they don't have that nature that would grasp the deeper stuff and then arrive at this surface.
I think you're there's something to that. It's almost as if the original idea was lost in translation and or put through a series of mirrors and has become distorted, and it's almost becomes a caricature of sorts that can be passed around and exchanged. And I think probably one of the leading causes of that, I think, is just the nature of information nowadays. Everyone can pick up a guitar or a violin, and people across the entire world, I think, they can take it up in their own time. But then it leads to, I think, a loss of the original rootedness of the piece, like the Hungarian dances, for example, of Brahms, or even the particular melodies and themes that one can find in Chopin, which is based on the nature of a woman's voice, which is something which you really do not, I think, appreciate when it's been taken out of that context. And the same is true, too, I think, with buildings. If you look, I think in Asia, don't they have almost like mock European cities? Like there's a Paris.
Yes, it's very strange, very strange stuff indeed. And it never looks even real. It's too clean. It's too tidy.
It's not lived.
Yeah, it's not lived in. And I guess a similar thing to that is in Disneyland. I think in Florida, where there's somewhere one of these theme parks Epcot. In America. It might be Epcot, yeah, where they've got like a fake European village.
Yes. Kind of,
it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know,
we shouldn't be living like this. There should be people who want that should either build a new one themselves for real, or they should go to the original. But there shouldn't be a simulacrum of it that's phony. It just is completely wacko.
You'll find this interesting. So it's directly related to this. In Epcot, there used to be a Norway exhibit. So like there was Morocco, there was Spain, there was Japan. In the Norway exhibit, there used to be like a troll ride, like a boat ride or a log flume ride that you went into. And it was actually kind of cool. This would have been years and years ago. But there used to be like trolls and things, and it used to end with something along the lines of the spirit of Norway will always be something and something adventure, something like that. But now the entire area, basically, it's all based on Frozen, you know, like that Disney cartoon now. They got rid of everything, and now it's all been it's been Elsified or whatever it is.
My God.
It's tragic. But that's what I think you get when it's a mere simulacra. It can become so easily divorced from the original archetype or plan that you have to go to appreciate.
Well, this is all about the commodification of things. So if you've got the Norway, I mean, the Frozen thing is, and that replacing the Norway thing is bad in itself. But also the very idea of the Norway simulacrum in the first place is sort of bad. I mean, I'm guessing the way this happened was Americans can go to Epcot, but they can't necessarily go to Norway and
right.
or even a range of European countries. So
we'll bring it to them.
we'll bring it to them in a miniature form, and so they can just go to this one place and experience all of these old European cultures.
There might be an innocence about it at first. Like at first, oh yeah, well, it seems like an innocent idea without any harm that can come of it. But at the same time, though, because I think when Disney planned it, I doubt he had. I'd like to think he didn't have anything sinister behind.
Oh, I doubt it. I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure it was done with the best of intentions. But the trouble is, as I say, it results in the commodification of this
right.
thing, and the real danger here is that then influences the original thing.
Yes.
So then Norway, because that will be a sort of simplified version, very simplified and stereotypes and you know, all that. So then the real Norway has to start catering to that.
Right. It would have to live up to the expectations that the Americans or whoever have of the country.
So, yes.
Yeah.
it's so perverse. You couldn't make it up. It's a very, very strange thing. But I think you can see this in the, like, so for example, France. Well, I came to France. Where's the guy in the stripy vest with the onions and garlic? otherwise, how do I know I'm even in France? I mean, this is a mentality that could, and I think does exist. It's just it's so obviously offensive that it does kind of get muted, but it is there, and even subconsciously we start to expect this. The real version of something should be like the fake version of it that I've seen elsewhere,
right?
Otherwise,
it's tragic. It's horrible.
Yeah, it very much is. Because, of course, the real version of something is always more complicated and subtle and surprising than the caricature of it. That's the nature, that's the whole point of caricature. So I think that that is a danger. And this is, again, why I would say young Americans should try to, and I'm not saying it, all of them, I'm just, because I think there are a lot of people that this stuff would just be wasted on, frankly. And that goes for any population, not just Americans. I think the intelligent, thoughtful young Americans should try to go to Europe itself and then to see different countries. But again, it should be as slow as possible. Mm-hmm. And this is the trouble, because I know it costs money.
Yeah.
I know that. This is a sort of ideal vision that I have here. It's not altogether realistic. I'm talking what I would prefer to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me back to another thing. You were talking about the cobbled streets. And something that I was trying to impress upon you when you were at the time was that built, because you were sending me photos, and I was saying things like, that building there, that's been there for centuries, that landscape mm-hmm. there, that field, the hill, the...
Your ancestors would have, like,
yes,
seen this for, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. White men have looked at that hill for thousands of years. It's not like a few centuries. Or a few decades, even. It's thousands of years. And I was I didn't want to be overbearing and condescending, mm. but I wanted to sort of make sure that you understood mm-hmm. what you were actually immersed in there, because it is a striking thing. And it's something that I think we in the old world can take for granted, or just not even notice. And this, again, comes back to the issue of commodification. I think that we don't really understand, because we're born into this. And yet the world on the screen is more real to a lot of us than the actual world. So we don't appreciate, my ancestors have been here for 1,000 years or thousands of years. That hill, that mountain, that river. This stuff should be deeply, profoundly meaningful to us, and
it should almost be sacred, not. In a sort. Yeah.
Yes, it should be sacred, because at least in terms of worldly experiences, what else? What could be more sacred than that? And I mean, obviously, if you believe in God and whatever, then that's a different matter. But in terms of the material world, nothing. I don't really know what could be more sacred than this.
There was something too, commodification. It was, since this part might get a bit kind of depressing, but there was a large influx of people that came in, and they were selling lots of things that are almost, not even caricatures, but almost vulgar, really distasteful junk, basically. I showed you pictures of, God, what would it be? Like T-shirts of, like, Raphael's... Michelangelo's... Raphael. That's who did David.
No, it was Michelangelo's David.
Michelangelo's David and Raphael. No, Raphael of the Sistine Chapel. Sorry. Michelangelo did David. Sorry. Oh, my God. I need to drink some tea. Hang on one second. I need caffeine. Let's see. Yes. What else? Like the Mona Lisa of all things. Too. So like this, like T-shirts with like the Mona Lisa superimposed. I actually have photographs, so it might help for viewers. Let's see here. I mean, like this kind of stuff would be tragic. Let's see here. What else? Other garbage, and they'd be selling like soccer T-shirts or football T-shirts, bobbleheads at every single tourist attraction. at every single thing, as well as like just junk that could be found anywhere. And I was very, very insistent on not buying anything like that. If I was to get a souvenir, it would be something that would be one of a kind and meaningful. And when I was in Florence, they did have a lot of leather. They had a lot of leather shops. I wasn't sure how much of it was Florentine leather they were selling, but I made sure to go to a like an ancient leather, what do you call it? It was something run by monks, basically. And it was behind this this massive church. And I was able to get a leather cigar case. And I felt that was wonderful. I mean, it was a bit expensive, but a lot of the authentic stuff there, of course, it's understandable that it's so expensive, but to see a culture being commodified, to see a people's achievements being commodified and reduced to not even one dimensional, but zero dimensional parodies of
it's themselves. Very depressing. It's just so awful. And I think,
it makes you almost want to go up to the person and say, like, what the hell are you doing? And whether or not they would even understand why it's a problem. That's another thing, too, that's depressing.
Well, indeed, there is this matter that it's one thing for me to say to you, okay, this is the old world. This is your birthright. This is where you come from and all this. It's one thing for you not to be familiar with it. But when the denizens of the old world themselves don't realize how important it is, when, you know, that's just so awful. And then
amnesia,
I think
that's horrifying. Oh, God.
Yeah. And I think that you said that a lot of the tourist tat was actually being sold by Turks and
yes.
stuff. Who weren't, so obviously they've, God. Oh, God.
All you know, of the, it's like just the shopping, so, in Rimini, that's all the people that own the shops. Or Asians.
Yeah. This is appalling. I don't know what to say. I don't want to Fed post, but this is just so bad. It's this thing about, so the Italians aren't selling, so they've sold their own culture. And they've allowed aliens in. So now the aliens are cashing in on Italian culture and selling it to more, to tourists.
Commodified versions of the culture as well, too.
Yes, yes. So it's a culture that they don't even understand. It's not even theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're selling caricatures off right. it to, I mean, you couldn't and make like, this up.
Yeah, Rimini, too. That's the getaway, basically, for Italians. Like the beach, the beaches of Rimini, they're said to be, like, I think, the most one of the most beautiful on the Adriatic coast. But yeah, that's all the shops. It was either cheap junk, commodified versions of the culture. But at the same time, though, this is interesting. There seemed to be a resistance of sorts to this on part of the Italian people. Not so much as, of course, if they have to, like, buy, I don't know, like a bottle of water, they're going to do it, of course. But they seem to have, this was just my interpretation of it, a recognition or an aversion, it's difficult to say, it's difficult to put into words something that is a mere an attitude. You can't really explain it or express it in words. There was almost like a noticing about it, but at the same time, a begrudging acceptance of the fact that for just practical purposes, you gotta get your bottle of water at the shop yes. or whatever. Surprisingly, though, it's a very, very superficial thing. It's almost as if the people are tacked on from the outside. It's like you have a, I don't know, like a dartboard of sorts, and the darts are just being flung onto it, and they're just barely sticking, but there's just a lot of darts, and they could really easily fall off, but there's still a bunch that are sticking on there. That's how it almost seemed. There's not this penetration of the culture and subversion of it. It's almost tacked on.
It's more like side. Barnacles on it. Or,
yes.
Yeah. Dare I say parasites?
Yeah, yeah. I think that might be a... Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
It's people feeding off something else. And, you know, I understand in the real world, this is going to happen. But it really is something that I wish Europeans had not let happen. I mean, Italians, I should say, Italians can be surprisingly forthright, far more than Northern Europeans.
Oh, yes. That's like definitely, you get that as an American going over there, too. Yeah,
definitely.
It's like, you could definitely tell.
In Milan, one time, I was sitting outside I think it was at the same time as that big Icelandic volcano thing. That actually happened while I was there, so I was stranded there for an extra week, which wasn't altogether unwelcome, to be honest. And I was in Milan, I think sitting outside a bar at night and just chatting to some guy who was there. And then one of his friends walked down the pavement in front of us and saw it, recognized his friend, and gave him a fucking Roman salute. Yeah. right, just in front of me. Right out in the open. And, you know, this, I tell you, this is without a word of a lie. That happened. That would never, ever happen in Britain, in France, in Germany, or Austria. But it did happen in Milan. It did happen in Italy. Now, I'm not saying that wish that for the rest of the world. I'm just saying it was quite an amazing thing to witness. And so this is what I mean. It surprises me that Italians, it surprises me that they're in the position they're in. But I guess that they're just victims of modernity. I mean, their birth rate is dreadful. Hmm. And, you know, I've got a photo from when I was first there in 1987, and it was a big family photo. It was like all of the, my cousins, my second cousins, and the uncles and the aunts, and you know, all of that. And it was a big bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And of course, each one of those people, there'll be other families that they're linked to. Mm-hmm. So it was amazing. And everyone had like three siblings, you know, it was families with four kids each and all that. And that the whole stereotype of the Italian family, the old mama and she's cooking and the nonna's helping and all that, that was all real then in 1987. It was still there. It was still the norm. And in the space of a few generations, I mean, starting with the boomers, and I'm not saying that they'd started it, that it's their fault. I'm just saying that they were the first generation that seemed to manifest this. They had fewer kids. They got divorced. Then God knows what with Gen X and millennials. And now they've got an extremely low birth rate. I believe at one point it was the lowest birth rate in Europe. I don't know if it still is. But you would never expect that of the Italians, because as I say, they've got this reputation for having large families and being very virile, especially the men. I mean, it's the cliche of the Italian guy, you know. So they're victims of modernity in that sense, but they're also victims of modernity in the other sense, which is that everything gets commodified, everything is turned into a product. And of course, people are divorced from their own heritage. Again, you wouldn't expect it in Italy, of all countries, because their heritage, you know, there's the Catholic thing is very deep. It's very intense. And also just their national pride, their sense of, and again, this divides down into the regions, of course. But they seemed to be a people who took their identity and their heritage very seriously. And yet, as with other countries in Europe, they've very much fallen victim to all of the ills of modernity. It's very sad. But what I want to concentrate on is not this, because obviously it's depressing, and we all know this stuff. I mean, we all know that, you know, it's a bad situation. What I want to keep it on to is your impressions as a newcomer to that. I mean, obviously, it's annoying that the foreigners are selling Italian stuff back to it's a culture that's not even theirs. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, we can talk about that, but again, we all know that. So, is there anything else that you'd want to say about the relationship between what you saw, the relationship between the people and their environment, the culture, the ways that they communicated with each other, all of that, that struck you as different? And can this stuff be verbalized at all, or is it just sort of intangible?
I think much of it is intangible. But I think there's definitely in the modern world, intangibility is often taken to be unreality. It is something that it's either non-existent or it is something that is purely imaginary. When I don't think that's true at all. And I think that's starting to be recognized, I think, by a lot of younger people that are more inclined to our spheres, I think. The intangibility of if you want to call it, the physiognomy of architecture, or even just the attitude that people have, it's something that can only be fully appreciated from being there, from a standpoint wherein you are in direct contact with not only the people. For example, we have never met in person, but we've only through the internet. So there's still a kind of we've never actually met each other in person. The same thing goes, it is also, I think, the case when you merely appreciate a painting on the internet. Like, for example, I've never been to the Louvre, and I've never seen the Mona Lisa. But I could also say, though, I've seen the Mona Lisa. Here's a picture of it right here on the internet. There's a difference between seeing something in a photograph and seeing something in person. For example, when you see a photograph of the Mona Lisa on a computer screen, you don't see the Mona Lisa. You're looking at pixels on a screen that are have certain levels of brightness and so on. And you're looking at a computer screen. You're not looking at the Mona Lisa. The same thing is true when it comes to even speaking with someone over the phone or over a Skype call or even what we're doing here over a live stream. At the same time, too, you're not able to take into account the person's environment. So there's all of these factors that are so determinative of every single aspect of the Italian experience or their world, their nature, their environment, and their lived world. I mean, you can't even express their reality basically in words. You have to be there in order to appreciate it. And if you don't go there physically and make contact with the ground, make contact with the old buildings and the interact with the people, or even just stare and, well, not stare, of course, but just appreciate from afar and take in their way of life that way. And only then, I think, will you really be able to say that you have seen something or you have been able to experience something. As opposed to artificially through a particular medium.
Yeah, I agree. And this is, again, why I was saying just sit and watch.
Yes.
just get a drink somewhere, sit down and watch. Yeah.
A tragic thing is that when you, it becomes much, one thing, of course, too, is like money and things like that. But at the same time, there can be almost an embarrassment about it. Like what people, is, I think people that are kind of like self-conscious or, might, they're not outgoing. I think they also too might feel like they're, they might say something along the lines of, what if someone is like, what might people think of me if I'm just like, if I'm sitting at a cafe for 10 hours a day, basically just watching people walk by, are people going to judge me and things like that? I think that's a very American thing. A lot of Americans, they kind of internalize this, they try to keep up with appearances, when it comes to, being like, not,
keeping up with the Joneses.
Exactly. When it comes to just, walking in the same direction as everyone else is walking in. Yes. It's, I think in a culture and in being in a region that's very different from the United States too, I think that might, be, of some concern to an American, but I think that's something which should be looked over, should be pushed aside, I think. And what's most important is to really try and immerse yourself in that environment and not let the, one's own prejudices or, anxieties get in the way of that. So I would leave it at that, I think. I would also say too, the very nature of buildings as such too, the very nature of the way, neighborhoods, or they're not even really neighborhoods, but just towns and cities are constructed too. They're the way that they're constructed over time, they are organic. And that's something which really can only be appreciated through, through the eye rather than, a computer screen.
Absolutely. And this is something that, something where I think that America has sort of shot itself in the foot by having, by the accident of having so much space.
Yes.
So it means that you can always just build anew and start again and start a new town. It seems like there isn't that imperative to reuse the same town and gradually evolve it over time. And it's a real shame, actually, because I don't know what how this plays out. All I know is that in America, there isn't that sense of age. Now, it might just be because the amount of time involved is shorter, mm-hmm. than in the old world. Or it might be a mentality, but I can't help but think that the sheer amount of space that's available in America must play a part here. Because everything is, and that's the other thing, and I remember saying this to you, that in an Italian village or town, everything is within walking distance, mm-hmm. by necessity, it just is. Whereas in America, you know, the car is a massive thing. It's a massive thing in people's lives, mm-hmm. And so you don't get this compression of activity in a small space. And I think it's a real shame. I mean, I think this is, and it seems to be the way that we naturally do this. The way that we naturally do things is within the Dunbar's number, and no doubt an equivalent for geographically speaking. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're evolved for traveling so much in the car every day.
I'd hate to see. I've seen it in the past, like how many hours or how many days or years we spend our lives in a car. Or an automobile, or a like a train, or an airplane, or that become. It's like similar to how many hours you spend sleeping, your entire life. I think it's a third, or a bit less than that. Spend a third of your life sleeping. Speaking. That's probably. I have no idea for that, it's within America. I think there's almost a sense that it has. One is obligated to take up that space and do something with it. They need to show that. So for example, if there's a farmland, that is currently up for sale, what's going to happen to it is it's going to be turned into a parking lot or a warehouse of some sort. It's never going to be bought by someone who will just leave it the way it is. It's always going to be turned into some kind of outpost for Amazon or, I don't know, some kind of distribution center. It's never going to be left as it was before people were there. Another scary thing, too, is the fact that people who do not have, there's almost a vicious cycle or a vicious circle about it. The pressure to build things anew and to tear things down, it only increases the amount of, it decreases the lack of rootedness. So the more you tear up and tear down, there is less and less time to establish oneself. And if such a state of affairs continues, I don't think America would ever immerse itself into the ground like Europe did or Europeans did. It would always be caught in that perpetual cycle of rootlessness, in a sense, no matter how many years or how many centuries we spend here. I think it is in part mindset, in part geography, and in some sense, history as well. But I also think, too, just the way that the makeup of the country, too, I think it's impossible for that to take shape here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, maybe, I think the sheer amount of space just means that people won't do this. There's no reason for them to evolve a place organically over many centuries. And so they just won't. But it's a shame. I mean, I saw this shared a few weeks ago. It's a new village that's been built somewhere in Georgia in America. And here are some photos. I'll show you two photos of it. These are all new buildings. The street is new. And it's obviously harking back to something from the past. Mm-hmm. And something from the old world. And here's another one of it. And as you can see, it's quite pleasant. Mm-hmm. There's just, but from my point of view as someone from the old world, there's just something not right.
it's almost like a liminal, you know, those liminal space pictures, how there's something like off about it. It's like something that you would see in a bad dream or in some kind of like fever dream.
Yes.
It's almost like, or like a David Lynch movie of sorts. It's like a building you would see in that. There's something, it's almost like an amalgamation of old and new in a way that is fused together that kind of comes off as uncanny.
Yes. And it just doesn't seem organic. There's something, I think it's maybe the I don't know what it is. Maybe the ground is
the angles too are very, very sharp. It's not so organisms are always curved. The sharpness, like the rigidity of everything, that's kind of it's off-putting. It's almost like it's painful in a sense to look at.
Yeah, it is, because it's supposed to, it's trying to be something but isn't managing it, and that's what's what gives the sense of why it's painful to look at. Now I could contrast that with some nice buildings from Edinburgh, the areas of Edinburgh that I could show photos of, that just immediately you know, okay, this is organic. This is something that's developed over time, and it's lovely. And I'm not saying this to have a go at America. I'm just saying, I think the abundance of space means that this, you end up having to fake what emerges in Europe naturally, which is unfortunate.
It is a shame, I think. And America, if we were to look at American architecture that's distinctively American, it's difficult to point out. For example, if one goes into the city of Chicago, I would say that the really is something that you would find in America. Every one of those buildings you can imagine plopped anywhere else in the world. That's what's kind of a shame.
Because did you see that thing from China? There was this thing, it was like a huge, let me see if I can find it. It was absolutely appalling.
Oh, no.
It was all of these houses had been built identical.
Are they like one of those ghost cities or something like that? Or
there are several of them that I've found here. Something called the Huaxi Village. Oh my God! Right, okay, I'll put this up on screen. This is just frightening. Hold on a second. Right, here's one.
Oh my god, it looks like a prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't it just absolutely awful? And then there's another one here.
That's weird too. It's like, yeah, there's something not right about that.
Yeah, but these aren't even the ones that I had in mind. There was another one that was even worse because they were going for a certain aesthetic, a sort of castle, like chateau sort of aesthetic. Oh, here it is. All right, this wasn't in China. This was in Turkey. Oh. So, this is just, yeah. Okay, I'll put this up on screen. And this is very strange. Hold on a second. Right. And, you know, it feels a bit exploitative to sort of point at this and laugh.
Oh my God. But it's depressing. I can't even laugh at it, to be honest. It's like, oh my God. They almost look like, oh my gosh. It's like an episode of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
The Turkish Zone.
Yeah, there's another one off it. And then a wide shot coming up, which is,
So which way like was Western man, the pod or your castle?
Yeah, exactly. See, this is something where they probably thought, oh, everyone will want to live in one of these. We'll build.
Who doesn't love a castle?
Yeah, so we'll build 1,000 of them. But it's really awful and uncanny valley and sort of.
I mean, I can imagine a machine like shitting one of those out, a machine just moving across the road and just shitting one castle out at a time.
Someone switched the on button and then forgot to press off at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Changed the algorithm slightly. It's a very frightening thing. But I forgot how we got onto that, actually.
Architecture.
The need to
commodification, things like that.
And how it's better if somewhere, if a place evolves organically over time, and you end up also with this, a people who are connected to it. Now, I mean, what worries me is that life is now such that people won't get attached to their village, and they will want to leave their village, and people. And so you will end up with everywhere possibly looking like that. This is a very scary thing. And I would hope that, this is the kind of thing that makes me just wish for collapse, so that this just does not happen. Mm-hmm.
Because the scary thing is,
the pod and everything is not going to be better than what we have.
Yeah, the scary thing is, in mathematics, there's the concept of the limit, where you have a series of numbers that's converging towards another number, but will never reach it. it will always be approaching ever closer, but we'll never hit it. It's like 1 plus 1.5 plus 1.75 plus 1.8 and so on and so on and so on, but you'll never reach 2. That's the thing, that just that slow train wreck that will never end. It will always just be in, destroying itself, but slowly and slowly. That's the scary thing is, and that's something too, which in America, I could see that. I don't want it to happen, of course. That would be horrible. But I think in Europe, though, I think it would be very different. It's much more, I can envision something like that for America as opposed to Europe. Europe, I think it would be much more decisive. But
Yeah, I'd hope so. So you also wanted to say about when you went back to America, and then you, shortly after that, you visited Texas. And,
yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah,
okay. That was so. Yes, right after I came to, about a little less than a week after I arrived home, the first thing. So I went back to Chicago, then went to Texas. The spatial, the amount of space. That's the first thing too. That's the shocker. There's so much available space, but it's always under. Construction. It's always being developed. There's never anything that is not being developed, whether it's a shopping center, a neighborhood filled with like McMansions, or one thing too is shopping centers that are focused on all, like everything is there. There's movie theaters, restaurants, places to live, sleep, and so on and so on. These all-in-one community centers of sorts. You don't find that in Italy. As well as, too, forgive me for this, but fat people. In Italy, there was no... I never saw... Well, I saw fat people, but, like, usually it would be an American. You could tell because of the physiognomy and the way that they were fat. Horrible inflammation. Like, that's something, too, that was kind of funny. In Italy, though, it must be a dietary thing, because they just don't have that. Like, there's no fat people. But in America, though, on the other hand, in Texas, yeah, really, it's very prevalent. Another thing, too, that's scary is more commodification. Everything is commodification. If you go to a place to, I don't know, buy something, there's always going to be like laser tag next door, or bowling, or mere recreational activities and things like that. There's no, apart from like San Antonio or places like that, there's really no rootedness about it. It's always on the move. It's always... everything is being built anew, and everything else is either destroyed or deconstructed to build something anew again. And it's something which is really, I think only an outsider could appreciate it, or an insider who, after going outside, came back inside to appreciate it. And it's something which I think is really just part of the American character, unfortunately. And I don't know if it's really possible to alleviate it, or to find any kind of remedy other than to be the first person to start to just start making changes, essentially, to stay within your community and not abandon it for something else, not abandon it for the cities, to ensure that you're able to establish connection with your land. I mean, we've heard a bunch of people on previous streams talking about, not so much going off-grid, but just being self-sufficient, staying within one's community, trading and exchanging things within your community, building a relationship with others. And I think unless we do that, we're just going to really never reach that. We're always going to remain trapped within ephemerality, essentially. We're never going to find a resting point where we could finally say, wow, look how far we've come, and let's appreciate what we have. And let's hope we can make that work.
Yeah. Okay, that seems like a good place to wrap up. I mean, it is a very interesting topic and a very interesting experience that you must have had. And so I wanted to get your impressions of it just on Millennial, because there are a lot of Americans who have never been to the old world, and there are a lot of people from Europe who have never been to America. But and you know, that's a different thing altogether. I don't necessarily think that every intelligent young European should go to America, should visit America. But I do think that the other way around should happen. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I think that America is a project, an experiment, and a country and all that. But Europe is where we came from. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that should be meaningful to every white American. And I think it's a damn shame if it isn't. You know, I think it was a real shame if there were Americans who just don't understand why they should care about the old world. I mean, that would be and I'm sure there are. I'm hoping not among the more cerebral Americans. So yeah, is there anything else that you'd want to say just as conclusionary thoughts about your first visit to Europe?
I think we basically covered everything. I would say, first of all, that I would love to go back. Not to stay, I don't think. To stay for, a period of months or even a year, I mean, that'd be wonderful. But I think I would get a lot out of it, I think, intellectually speaking, as well as spiritually speaking. I also think, too, that what you say about recommending Americans to visit the old world, certain Americans, that is, the ones that would have the more inclined to get something out of it, of spiritual use or practical use or intellectual use. I would agree with that, I think. Ultimately, though, I would say this. I think, so this is a bit of a white pill, I guess. It was almost too perfect. Of course, it was a work, it's not a perfect in the sense of absolute perfection, but it was almost too good to be true. It was something that I would never have, based upon what we have over here, in America, it was almost ideal in a sense. Even going to the beaches of Rimini, too. So there's kind of like some degenerate stuff and whatnot. But even then, though, what you talk about, like the whole multi-moral society, how there's different layers of things and how they're all recognized, well, at the same time, they're kept apart. There's an ideal about every aspect of that society of sorts that can be appreciated by some while discouraged by others. I think the whole entire atmosphere over there, it's something which is so rewarding and rich in wealth, not necessarily material wealth, but just spiritual wealth and just overall all around good feeling about it, that is something which is worthwhile for every dissident, intellectual dissident, I would say, in America, or even just your average American who could get something out of it to visit and appreciate.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I think that is true. And as I've said, I think they should do that. It would be a shame for an intelligent young American. A shame for an intelligent American to never be acquainted with the old world. Definitely. So, Okay, well, let's leave it there. I will be back in about half an hour with Paranormies. In the meantime, Pessimistic Idealism, thank you for appearing on Millennial 8.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye for now. And I'll leave you with the merch and outro, because I think that's rather ironic given what we've been talking about. Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. T-shirts and mugs and other wondrous gifts are available in the merchandise store. Impress your family, friends, colleagues, and business partners with these incredible items. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.